latest edition of the By The Men MFC podcast. Today I'm joined by regulars Jay and Busta, and also happy to welcome Joe Smith. How are you, mate?
I'm all right, how are you?
Yeah, doing fine, a wee bit hungover, but apart from that, we're okay. Yesterday, so close to a precious 3 points against Ross County, denied by basically the last kick of the ball, County grabbing an equaliser to claim a 2-2 draw at Fir Park. Joe, it was incredibly disappointing. We lost a goal basically on the stroke of half-time and then on the final whistle as well. And when you look at the league table, 3 points would have made a hell of a lot of difference.
Aye, absolutely. It was a bit of a kick in the teeth indeed. But for the last 30 minutes, I just thought we were under the cosh non-stop for the last 30 minutes. And you could see it coming. The way things were going towards the end. I don't think we covered ourselves in glory, particularly yesterday. Going forward, we'd hardly any shots that I can remember, and it just seemed to be a constant barrage of Ross County pressure. And I thought, actually, if we were going to escape with 3 points, it was going to be that. It was going to be an escape. It was going to be, actually, you know, 3 points that we didn't really deserve. But that said, that doesn't make it any easier to take.
Yeah, Jay, for me it was kind of disappointing that we sat so deep. It seemed like we didn't really know what to do when we went ahead yesterday. We invited Ross County onto us, and when the equaliser came, it almost felt inevitable.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of it, I think, is to do with just the lack of confidence in the team at the moment. And we're struggling so much for goals and results. I think when they find themselves 2-1 ahead in a game that we don't really deserve to be 2-1 ahead in, I think it's almost natural to sit back and just kind of hope that you can hold out for the rest of the game. But overall, it was pretty dire stuff. I mean, you look at the stats after the game, and they're pretty terrible reading, considering this was a really vital game against a team that we're in a relegation scrap with. So the fact that Ross County can come down to Motherwell from Dingwall and basically control the game, for long spells, we did look as though you know, we were playing against a team that's far higher up the league than us. So the fact that this is a team that it may come down to between ourselves and Ross County or St Mirren come the end of the season in terms of relegation battles, it's worrying times. And I think Ian Barraclough, sitting in the main stand, will have, you know, realised that he's got his work cut out, because it was not a good performance. And you know, it was inevitable. We lost the game. We lost the win. We threw away 2 points. But we never really deserved to be in the position of a 2-1 lead in the first place. And to be honest, I heard on the radio after the game, I think, I can't remember who was covering it, but they said that 2-each was probably a fair reflection. I don't think it was. I think Ross County will be disappointed that they didn't manage to take all 3 points, because they certainly deserved it.
Yeah, but there's just so much going on just now with the new manager being appointed yesterday, new owners in place as well. It's kind of, we've got a lot to cover in a half an hour, but I think yesterday there was a couple of players who we perhaps expected to step up to the plate, given the futures are effectively on the line. And for me, they didn't do it. Ian Vigers, I don't want to single out players, individuals, but incredibly disappointing performance from him in the first half yesterday, hooked at half-time. I don't think Ian Barraclough in the stand would have been particularly impressed by the work rate of quite a few out there.
Well, as you said, you know, new owners, new manager. If there was a time to, you know, try and prove that you deserve a place in the team, it was yesterday with, you know, the manager sitting in the stand. I think Vigers is a tough one, because yesterday I think he was injured basically, but Not even just yesterday. You know, he's got a serious problem with his work rate. He loses the ball, he throws a huff, and he just sort of casually, you know, stunts back when, you know, you'd expect him to be doing a bit of chasing. It goes to show when, you know, we've got a 35, 36-year-old, whatever he is, Keith Lasley, running his heart out. You know, he might not be playing very well, but he's the one that's doing all the running. We've got Caswell sitting there doing nothing. Well, sorry, doing nothing's a bad way to phrase it. He's sitting there doing a defensive part yet. Keith Lasley's running about like a headless chicken, chasing everything. He's on the left, he's on the right, he's going forward, and then he's not got the legs to come back, unfortunately, because of his age. we set up yesterday without a left and a right midfielder for some reason. I don't know if there was supposed to be left and right midfielders, but there was just no width in the team whatsoever. John Sutton's very isolated. He's been terrible as well, to be fair. But, you know, as you say, whatever we were trying under McCall and Boric, to be honest with you, is no work. It was definitely no working. We got lucky. We went a goal ahead. And as you said, everybody could see it coming. And eventually it came out with that, basically the last kick of the ball.
Yeah, for me, Sutton's perhaps a luxury we can't afford just now. When he's given the service, he will score goals. But the problem is just now, he's not getting any service. And as a result, has failed to put the ball in the net in many occasions. I know he did score yesterday, so that sounds a wee bit of a contradiction straight away. But hopefully he can build up a partnership with Oyama. But given that could be cut short in January, I don't really see where John Sutton fits into our squad at the moment.
Well, when you look at it yesterday, for example, Ainsworth come on. And again, I think there's some problem with Ainsworth. I don't know if he's injured or what, but he can only either go for the first 60 minutes or come on for the last 20 or so. But he came on yesterday, we got a bit more direct, and he done what, you know, was expected of him. He put the ball in the plate for John Sutton. And if we can put the ball in the plate for John Sutton will be there to knock them in. He done it last season, you know, 25 goals, whatever it was. If you say playing him up front himself or be a Yaman behind, it is not working, because even if he wins the ball, he's knocking it on to nobody. There's a couple of times in the last few games where he's brought it down in his chest and he's knocked it to Ainsworth or Yama or even Law, whoever's coming in, and he's doing pretty well there. But as I say, most of the time the ball's getting punted at him and it's not working. I feel kind of sorry for him, but he has been terrible. And as you say, we definitely need to change it anyway.
See, Buster, see the thing, watching the last couple of games, I think, you talk about Ian Vigers, and also people are talking about Ainsworth. Why is he not getting a game? I think it's abundantly clear with the two of them that you can't play the two of them in the same team because of their work rate, and yet they're probably our two only creative players at present. The only two players that look as if they're capable of putting a ball anywhere near Sutton. So we've got huge problems on that front. I think Sparra as well earlier on, you said about, you know, yesterday's game, they should have been playing for their careers. I think when you look at the team just now, we don't have a lot of options. So the team's kind of picking itself, and I don't know whether that kind of complacency is setting into the team, and then the players just don't have any threat to any players for the bench, as far as they can see it, and they're playing that way.
100% agree with that. As you says, yesterday they brought on a wee boy at left wing, and he was terrorising us down that side. At one point, they swapped to Josh Law in Ainsworth, and Josh Law sort of covered in with Ferguson on the right hand side, and you know it worked a bit better. And then again, they switched over again, and you know, as I say, the wee boy on the left hand side was doing well for them, but they constantly come down that left hand side. Your right hand side, crossing the ball in on top of Francis Angle's, you know, his position. And three or four times he tried it, and eventually for the end there, it sort of, I don't think it came from that side, but you know, but the pressure paid off and eventually got the last minute equaliser.
I think the actual, just to jump in there, I think the biggest problem is we've got a combination of the complacency and players being luxuries we can't really afford anymore. I think we're paying the price that you've got guys like Vigers, Sutton, Ainsworth, who can play the games that they want to play. They can play their own style of football when they're in a side that's winning games, playing well and finishing second. They don't have the ability to sort of suit their game. They don't have the work rate. Or the mentality to sort of get their sleeves rolled up and get stuck into the relegation zone, which is what we now find ourselves in. So I think all these players are luxuries that we just can't afford at the moment. And that's where it's worrying, because Joe hits the nail on the head there. We don't have the players on the bench to come in. So, you know, you don't know where to go for here. These are the players that either need to step up to the plate or we need to sort of look at replacing them, because they don't have the mentality or the work rate to get us out of the position we're now in.
JC, when you talk about Sutton, I think one of the things that I'm most disappointed with about Sutton's performance this season is Sutton has been involved in relegation battles plenty of times in his career, at Dundee, at St Mirren. You know, he's been there at the bottom end of the table, so he should know what it's like.
Oh yeah, I'm not disputing that, but I think the difference is though the fact that you need to give him service. He's a luxury you can't afford based on the fact that he needs the service. So if you're not creating the service for him, then you need to take him out of the team and look to go another direction. It's obviously not working. I don't imagine that John Sutton's work rate really changes from week in, week out. I don't think he's working any less. I don't think he's playing any worse than he normally does, to be honest. I think normally he's just getting the service and he sticks them away. So if you're not making the service for him, you need to take him out and you need to put someone else in and try and work around that.
Yeah, we'll move this along, given we've got so much to talk about today. But firstly, I suppose we've got to welcome new manager Ian Barraclough to Fir Park. Jay, I would say it's been met with a mixed reaction, the appointment of Barraclough. Perhaps not the man that everyone wanted, but I think more people read up on him, and after his initial interview with MFC TV yesterday, people are maybe a bit encouraged by what he says. He seems to have brought a philosophy where he'll give young players a chance. It looks like he'll also not take anybody not pulling their weight, which we've already touched on quite a lot over the course of the first 10 minutes of the podcast. He's really coming in at the deep end though, isn't he, given St Mirren away next week, St Mirren bottom of the table, right alongside us, fighting for their lives.
Yeah, I think, you touched upon the idea of it, maybe not being the most popular decision. I don't think people were genuine. I can only speak for myself. My own opinion is I'm not disappointed by the appointment of Barraclough. I'm just disappointed that we didn't go for Van der Gag. I think there's a head and heart part to that. I think it's the nostalgic side or the affection towards an ex-player. But I also think that based on their managerial records, I felt that Van der Gag was better suited to Motherwell having taken an unfashionable top-tier side in Portugal into Europe and then won promotion with a second-tier side, which, let's be honest, could be something that we need to do in the future. But that's not... I think Barraclough was better... Van der Gag was better suited to the club, so I'm disappointed we didn't go down that route. But I'm not particularly disappointed in the fact that we've appointed Barraclough. I think his managerial career up until now does leave a lot to be desired. Sacked by Scunthorpe after 6 months with him in the relegation zone. He's went to Ireland, done well there, but, yeah, so did Pat Fenlon and Stephen Kenny, so we can't get too carried away. But if, as we're led to believe, he does have these extensive contacts and in-depth knowledge of the lower leagues in England, then we may have managed to appoint, Jim Gannon just without the insanity and complete lack of man management skills. So if we do manage to get a Jim Gannon type manager who is actually also a good manager and not just a complete nutcase, then we may have won a watch there. So I'm not too disappointed with the appointment. I think we also need to give the club the credit and the time that they deserve to sort of prove that it's the right decision, given the track record up until now has been good in that regard. But he is going to have to hit the ground running, because these, as we touched upon last week, these games could be the biggest games of our season, and we've not started them well. So we really need to get, a good performance and a good result against St Mirren.
Joe, I think for me the disappointment was based on the fact it took so long, it was dragged out, there was speculation on a daily basis that would be the day that we got our manager. In the end, and kind of in line with previous appointments, this one's come out of left field again. Barraclough, I actually only heard mentioned by Gordon Duncan on Tuesday. Then 4 days later, he's appointed as manager. So the club certainly kept their cards close to their chest. But you've got to give them credit in the fact they've interviewed 6 candidates. If Barraclough interviewed best out of these 6 candidates, then he's the best man for the job.
I think you're right. If they've followed a rigorous process in the past and they've managed to get good appointments, then there's no reason to say that this isn't going to work out well for the club. I think the only concern that I've got with Barraclough is the fact that as a relatively untried manager, there's been a lot of reference made to the fact that he's thought to have extensive contacts in the lower leagues, but we've got a couple of huge games coming up. We've then got a transfer window where I don't think we're going to have the finances to actually go out and sign any of the players that he's potentially going to have contacts for. by which case then we're looking at the summer of next year before he could, we can really test, you know, the contact database that he's got and he's, and if you like, his eye for a player. Because we're, you know, Jim Gannon was concerned. I don't think there's many Jim Gannon signings that anybody would criticise. The majority of his signings were all pretty decent. It was his man management skills that were a problem. So if we look at, you know, this appointment being comparable to Jim Gannon, then we could have a problem. And when being relatively untried, is he going to have the skills to motivate the players to get the best out of this existing group of players to make sure that we steer ourselves clear of relegation? I'm not really that sure whether we're going to be able to do that.
The only issue with that, Joe, though, is, I mean, if you're talking about experience and the ability, you know, if he's relatively untried, if you look at the shortlist, I mean, who would you have went for, Butcher or Shields? Because, you know, you could say the exact same about Van der Gag and Mascant. They're relatively untried. So, I mean, you know, I don't think you can say that's a negative, because if that is a negative, then surely your preference should have been Terry Butcher or Kenny Shields.
No, not necessarily, Jay, because when you think about in the past, managers were appointed, probably the last time we were in a bit of a lull when we appointed a manager was when we appointed Craig Brown. The team were on a dramatic slide after Jim Gannon just started being a lunatic. And we needed to try and find an experienced head. We thought a wee bit outside the box with the fact that we picked up a manager who hadn't been involved with football for a good few years before that point. For intents and purposes, people thought he was retired. So if you look at a managerial appointment like that, that was something that we done. We went out, we found that guy and put him back into football. And unfortunately then he decided to stick two fingers up to us and go to Aberdeen. But, you know, I think that's the type of managerial appointment I would have liked to have seen us go for at this point in a season. I think if you're talking about replacing the manager at the end of a season, then taking a risk on a name like Barraclough is potentially the right thing to do. I'm just worried that we're going to hit the buffers in May, and this guy won't have had a chance to actually prove what he's capable of doing, with, you know, the chance to bring players in and then mould his own team.
I think that's a good point, Joe. I don't know if Barraclough was unfortunate enough to be the man in charge, should we get relegated, whether he would have a future at the club. It's given we've spent so much time in the top flight, relegation attached to a manager of Motherwell Football Club would be a quite horrendous thing to have in your CV. It's all kind of coming down to finance, though, as well, isn't it, Buster? We don't know whether guys like a Brian and a Yama will stay at the club beyond January. We don't know if we'll need to sell to cut our cloth. We need more information on the financial side as well to see whether this manager can actually come in and put his own mark in the team.
You're right there. In regards to the information on the financial side, that's not something, you know, the general support a lot of us receives, unfortunately. The O'Brien, I don't think he offers much more than we may already have at the club. I'd be interested, I know a lot of people are a bit marmite about him, but I'd be interested to see Fraser Kerr giving a run at centre-half. I know he's injured the new or whatever, but if Oyama leaves, I think we're in big trouble. He's maybe not had it off with Sutton, as she says, but there's no, you know, he seems to be at a out ball anyway. Give him the ball, let him run past a player or two. Fair dues, he maybe makes the wrong choice at times, but, you know, he's probably our best player just now, and it's one of those things, as you say, I don't think there's going to be any money available for Barraclough in January. There's too many players picking up decent wages that we can't get rid of. You mentioned selling as well. You know, my question would be who are we possibly thinking of selling? There's no one person on the team that we can sell, I don't think. So it's one of those things. But in regards to Barraclough, I was not disappointed, but because of the hurrah about Van der Gag, maybe on Thursday evening, I think it was, I was expecting him to be, you know, appointed. And then obviously, if you're watching the odds, Barraclough went to 1-8, I think it was at one point, and then he was announced on the Saturday morning. So it's one of those things. Obviously, everybody will get behind him, but, you know, I don't know what will happen in regards to fit spending money in the future come May if we do end up, unfortunately, in the bottom two.
Yeah, it would have possibly made all the difference as well if we had claimed the 3 points yesterday. It would have got spirits up and gone into what I would describe as the biggest stage of our season. The three games over the Christmas period, all very winnable in my eyes. That would have been a massive boost.
Definitely. It's unfortunate, I think, that it's the changes, whether it be in the boardroom or the managerial changes, have come about at this time. It's all right saying, you usually get a wee bit of boost when a new manager comes in, but, if he's going to take a game or two to settle, these are the games that we need to win. So, it's sort of somewhere in the middle.
One of the things that I'm thinking, actually, if there is going to be any finances available to spend, in many respects, it is a good time for a new managerial appointment, because he's got a couple of games before the transfer window opens up to make his own mind up on the players, to get a good couple of weeks training sessions under his belt with them, to understand what they're good at, what perhaps the previous management have been missing, and then make the right decisions come January when the window opens. The only way it'll fall down is if we don't have that ability to actually, get some changes made in January with the playing staff.
Well, I think in that instance, we're going to be relying on people like Gunnar Nielsen, for example, willing to walk away from his contract. And I think his contract's up in June. But if we're going to basically bring people in, we're going to have to rely on people like him walking away basically from their job and hoping they can pick up another job, which, if it was me, I certainly wouldn't be doing it.
I think the loan market is going to be one that we'll need to be exploiting as much as possible. I don't know how much percentage of wages we're required to pay for loan players, but given his work at Huddersfield Barraclough, you would hope that he would be able to lean in some contacts there to bring us in some useful talent, because really with the squad we've got just now, it should be good enough to finish out with the bottom two, but in current performances, it's not going to be. And unless something changes in terms of the playing squad, whether it be attitudes, whether it be work rate or personnel changes, then I really believe that we're best case scenario destined for that playoff, because Ross County were hungrier than us yesterday, and that's the biggest concern. They wanted it more, and that's why they got that equaliser.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see, even if we have to keep the same squad, it'll be interesting to see what he does, because Kenny Black and Stuart McCall, they were basically the same person. They've not done much to change anything about it. There's times where we've lined up with four or five right backs in the team. Apparently Josh Waugh is a right back. When he covered at right back against Celtic, I thought he was pretty decent. I know he's getting a wee bit of, people were saying he was all right yesterday. He wasn't the worst in the team yesterday, put it that way, but it'll be interesting to see how Barraclough does set up, if he does have to stick with the same players as well.
It was interesting in his press conference where he set his stall out saying basically he likes his players to work hard, and he'll allow mistakes if they're working hard. That straight away shines a spotlight on a lot of the players that the fans have been critical this season, because I don't think any of the fans have been critical for players making mistakes necessarily. The fans have been critical because of the appetite and the hunger across certain members of the squad. So if Barraclough's as good as his word, then I think that's in our favour, and I think that could send a rocket up a few backsides.
Yeah, you would have kind of hoped to see it though yesterday, and in my opinion, it wasn't really evident that there was a new appetite and hunger amongst some of the culprits that we've already mentioned. We'll move on to the ownership. Shall we call it a saga now? It's been going on even longer than the process of trying to appoint a new manager. It looks like we have got our man, and the society will continue with running the club, so to speak. Joe, we talked about this for a good few hours yesterday before the Ross County game. It's very, very complex, and we need some clear answers on it. Delighted to say that Brian McCafferty, he'll be coming on the podcast for a special episode on Thursday. So what we're going to have is questions being sent in via Facebook and Twitter, and hopefully Brian will be able to clear up quite a lot of the questions that are on the fans' minds. But overall, it does look like we've avoided the club being lost to the community. It's now time for the fans to rally behind Les Hutchison and the Welsh society and hopefully take us on to better things.
Hopefully. I mean, I think I've been, since the days of the Wellworth Saving campaign, I've been a passionate campaigner to try and actually get fan ownership high up in the agenda. As you know, probably for time, myself and yourself, Andy, were working on the Supporters Trust. I really want to understand for Brian McCafferty what the vision is in terms of pulling in the revenue now, because I think what the last couple of months have evidenced is that you know, we've been asking the fans to put their hands in their pockets just now, and the money's not been coming forward at the rate that the club initially expected it to come at. So what is the Welsh Society's plan in terms of raising the additional revenue? All right, we've got 5 years to do it, but we need to evidence pretty damn quickly that we can do it, or else this guy is probably then going to just look at it and say, right, well, I'm just going to do whatever I want with the club and start to grow disaffected with supporter ownership pretty damn quickly. So I'd be interested to hear when you are sitting with Brian what he's got to say on that front.
Yeah, Jayford, you've been the most vocal on the society. Clear and concise hasn't really been something that you would level at the communication from them in the past. I actually spoke to Brian briefly yesterday, and he was saying that he knows that it's time to get engaged with the supporters. He knows that the last couple of years things have been going wrong, and it reflects badly on them. But they've got a second chance here to redeem themselves and get the fans back inside. He seems to have arranged quite a few meetings with supporters groups, and he wants to talk, basically, and that's the key issue that's been discussed so often, the lack of communication between the society and the supporters. So this looks like a positive step.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It is a second chance, if you like. I have been critical of the society quite a lot, but I think a lot of that, well, I think all of it's justified. I think that the communication has been incredibly poor. I think just the general, the general impression you get from the outside is that it's quite an amateurish setup that's kind of just stumbling along. And I think one of the biggest things for me that kind of ties in with the communication is that I don't think there's ever been any great encouragement or incentive for any supporters to actually sign up to the Welsh Society. I signed up right at the start, and I can't think of any time between then and now when I would genuinely have been convinced to join the society if I hadn't at the very start. It almost seems to be a case of, right, we've got the Welsh Society, you know, build it and they will come. The idea that if you have the society, fans will suddenly find a magical £300 under their mattress and rush to the Welsh Society to join. There's been no encouragement that I can see. Even the benefits that you were offered if you joined were, let's be honest, a bit pathetic. So there's a lot of things that need to be changed. There's a lot of things that need to be improved. But I do see this as a second chance, or a chance to sort of make things now happen. I don't quite share the excitement that this news seems to have elicited from a lot of people. For me, all that's actually happened is the deadline has moved from November this year till 5 years' time. The target still remains the same, just getting fans to sign up to the society. So there's a lot of work that needs done. But up until now, I've not paid my annual £50 fee after the £300 original membership cost. But I'm quite happy to start doing that again, with the understanding that it's now, you know, the society's second chance and it's theirs to lose, basically. You know, if they want to correct these things, if they want to make the improvements. And it is encouraging both to hear what Brian's been saying and, of course, Derek Watson in the podcast a few weeks ago. So if these changes do materialise and things start to move in the right direction, then I think, yes, we can all pull behind it. But for me, there's a lot still to be done. You know, this news doesn't really eradicate a lot of the ill feeling towards it or the negativity surrounding it. There still needs to be a lot shown from the society going forward.
Gee, I think just to pick up on a couple of bits that you mentioned there, I think you're right in what you're saying in the fact that it's a second chance. And I think your assessment of the fact that if you hadn't signed up right at the start, there has been nothing to actually provide an incentive there. The only bit that I disagree with you in the member benefits, I think the member benefits for the higher ranking entry level fees, you know, the member benefits, if you put $5,000 in at the start, they're actually pretty decent. And I think they're geared at expecting a lot of the people that have got substantial wealth in their pocket to come forward and get behind the society. And I think that's the bit where they've completely missed the mark. They don't understand how to get these people with money engaged and support our ownership, especially behind the principle of one member, one vote. Because I think a lot of people, when they think, I'm going to put in 5, 10, 15, 20 grand, whatever they're going to put in behind the football club, they want a bigger say than the people that are putting in the 300 quid at the bottom entry level. So I think they've got problems that they still probably need to address to make sure that everybody that they want to get enthused and put behind the society is get their concerns addressed.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to pick up on that, though. I think that in itself is a negative aspect. The idea that the benefits are great if you put in 5, 10, 15, 20 grand. Your average Motherwell supporter who, you know, I mean, we had the fantastic food bank collection outside the shop with the boys yesterday that looked like a really great success. You know, that's the area we live in. That's the times that we live in. So it's all very well having fantastic benefits for folk who have a spare $5,000 lying about. But for your average fan who goes along every week and who'll be listening to this podcast, who, you know, for them, 300 quid's a luxury. So if you're paying 300 quid to get a goals DVD that's pretty, you know, worse than stuff you can get on YouTube, 5% off your season ticket, which doesn't really amount to anything considering you've just paid 300 quid. And I think up until recently, you know, a free subscription to MFC TV, which was really the only thing, you know, decent you were getting. And now that's free. So, you know, the benefits for the plebs, the benefits for the riffraff and the peasants are really terrible. And unless those change, none of those people are going to put their hands in their pocket.
I'd agree with that.
Can I just say as well, I'm not a member. I just decided it wasn't for me at the time. Again, affordability was one of the issues that I considered. Now I'm thinking, you know, it's maybe time that they do their, you know, their £10 a month, whatever it is. I'm now thinking it's time I signed up for something like that, which I'm more than happy to do. I think the main benefit is obviously the survival of the club. I don't know what would happen, for example, if, you know, this guy had to come forward. Because essentially, if we want to understand, this guy runs the club. He's going to be running the club where the Welsh society were involved. But if this guy hadn't come forward, I don't believe there was too much hype. I don't believe all the hype about the South American thing either. I think that was maybe something that, if it was even thought about, quickly died off. Because MD, who was trying to invest in a club at Motherwell to make money, it's clearly after Rocker. So I don't know where it would have went from there if this guy hadn't come forward. I think, as I said to you yesterday, what we'll see is massive, massive cuts. You know, probably cutting the budgets in half at the end of this year, and then probably again at the end of the next year. So at what level will we be playing at? How, you know, how affordable it'll be for, you know, how we'll be able to afford sort of players' wages and things like that, I don't know. But I think one of the main benefits would be the survival of the club, basically.
I think that's it, but Buster, I mean, I think when you look at what your alternatives would be, if no wealthy benefactors were available that had the heart and soul of the club, you know, their best interests, what you're then looking at is you're looking at supporters' ownership, but what we've managed to come forward with so far is a much lower amount than what the club were looking for. The club were looking for it to basically maintain the budgets at the high top six sort of a level. If supporter ownership was the only option that we had, and the funds that everybody had put in was the maximum amount that they were willing to invest so far, well, you've just got to get a bit of reality about the fact that where Motherwell Football Club would sit in terms of budget, it would sit probably mid first division. It wouldn't be sitting in the SPL. And the only reason that teams like Ross County and Inverness are in the SPL with SPL budgets is because they've got wealthy owners.
From what I believe as well, that their budgets are a lot less. and you know, they pay their players a lot less as well, which is, again, which is fine if we end up, you know, a yo-yo club up and down, and, you know, we still have a club. You know, that's fine with me, to be honest with you, but obviously everybody wants the best for their club, whether it be success on the field. But I think, to be honest with you, the focal point should be at least keeping the club alive. I don't believe it was, you know, I don't believe we'd need any drastic measures as of yet, but if nothing had happened in the next couple of months, I just wonder where we'd have actually been.
Guys, we're going to need to wrap it up at that. We're well over time, but Joe, thank you very much for coming on. We'll hopefully have you on,
guys. Pleasure.
Soon again. Jay, Buster, thanks as always, guys.
Cheers.
No bother, cheers.
We'll be back on Thursday for a special edition of the podcast. Please send your questions via Facebook, Twitter, text message, anything you can. We really want to put as many questions as we can to Brian, and hopefully we'll get some answers too. Until then, cheers and goodbye.
It's complicated, up to my knees in it. Not pray, please kill it, but it won't go. So frustrated, not fell asleep dreaming. Just as the clouds clear, I wake up under the storm. Streets run with no cause. Quick dash for quick cash, don't pause. Round here, find a little rope, throw it in the sky, you can catch a little hope. And that's real in effect, because that money seemed to make a man feel some respect. So tell me who's spreading the bar, because I'm trying to make a bed, but I'm stuck in the gutter. But they say it's just a matter of time. Every Friday morning about 8:45, when I'm standing in lane, baiting my time for that one job that they're claiming is mine. And if it...